May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
With me are the three founders and owners of Saltwater Seeds, the newest in a long history of seed companies in Jefferson County. They are Katie Miller, Sam Scheidt, and Joanne Pontrello. Welcome, the three of you, to Attention, Please.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks.
So, Saltwater Seeds, when did it come into being, and what prompted the three of you to establish a seed company?
The way I remember the story, I've been working for the Organic Seed Alliance for a number of years now, and had always daydreamed about having my own seed company and had more or less been waiting for somebody to say, hey, Katie, do you want to start a seed company with me? And I was standing in my garden in Chimacum, looking down the Center Valley, and I got a phone call from Joanne, and she said, hey, Katie, do you want to start a seed company? And I said, yeah! And that year, that was April of 2019, we kind of in our spare time and casually grew a handful of seeds in our gardens and a little bit at the farm that Joanne was working on, and then sold them the next year.
Yeah.
Sam, when did you get drawn into this endeavor?
I don't remember the exact month, but I was working at OSA with Katie and just kind of brainstorming and talking about the project. And I got really excited and it seemed like some more help was needed. And so I joined the team, and then we kind of made it formal that winter, the following winter.
Why the name Saltwater Seeds? You're not growing kelp or eelgrass. You're growing vegetables for the most part, I think.
Great question. We turned over so many names in our process of trying to figure out a name. I honestly cannot remember any of the other ones.
We really wanted a name that was easy to remember and had a alliteration in it, just so that it would flow off the tongue easily.
What is your primary market? Is it vegetable growers like myself? Is it other seed companies? Is it commercial farmers? Whom are you looking to sell your seeds to?
Right now, our primary market are growers like yourself and other seed companies. It's hard to say which of those is more part of our business than the other right now. But I think the heart of the business lies in growing and selling seeds for our community.
And where are they available to the community? Where can I find them to buy them?
Currently, they are at the Port Townsend Food Co-op, the Chimacum Corner, Secret Gardens. And we will be selling at the Port Townsend Farmers Market for about 6 weeks. When they start, April through mid-May.
So what is the background of each of you relevant to this company? And let's start with Sam.
I've been growing vegetables in CSA market realm for many years, and then went in 2019 and did the Organic Seed Alliance internship, and then started working with Katie. And so that's my formal seed knowledge. And then in 2021, continued working for OSA. And so just trying to transition from growing vegetables for market sale and then more into the seed side of things.
So why did you want to make that transition?
Growing vegetables for market is a little bit of a grind, and I really was fascinated with seeing the full life cycle of plants. It's a lot different workflow, and I just found it very interesting.
And you have your own farm, I believe. It's called Goosefoot Farm.
Yeah, that's a collaboration project. Me and three other co-managers grow on the same farm as OSA, the Finn River Orchard property, and we grow vegetables for the JCARF CSA and the local food banks, and we're starting to work with the Recovery Cafe in town.
Right down the street from KPTZ, actually. Katie, you come from far away. You come from the East Coast, I believe. So you learned your farming and gardening elsewhere. I am curious what brought you out here and what your farming experience was before you came here.
Okay. I ran a CSA farm in Rhode Island, just outside of Providence in Cranston, for 9 years. We had a 100-member CSA, and we also grew and sold seeds. We started off growing seeds for use on the farm and got into seed sales just a little tiny bit. And then I came out here in 2015, I believe. There was some amount of push-pull to get out here. I had heard that there were people doing seed work in the area. I even went to a workshop that John Navazio had run when I was out here visiting my friend Anna, who lived here before I did. And I had fallen in love with the seed work in Rhode Island, but was making it up entirely. There were no mentors for me in Rhode Island as far as the seed work goes. I don't think there were any other seed growers there, at least not that I've heard of. Came out here to learn more about the seed work, and I worked for a year at Nash's, growing large-scale contract seeds for them, working really closely with Sam McCullough and Taylor McCormick, and then landed a job at OSA and was able to learn a lot from Lori and Michaela.
Organic Seed Alliance is OSA, and we've heard that several times, but sometimes we need to explain these things. Joanne Pontrello, I know you the best of the three. You have a degree in biology from the University of Washington. You could be working in a lab. You could be going to grad school. You could be working for a government agency. And here you are, a farmer and growing seeds. Explain.
Well, when I was at the University of Washington getting my degree in biology, I started studying botany and then got fairly involved with the student farm there. And that's kind of like, I had been gardening before that, but that's really what started this farming trajectory that I've been on. Eli Wheat was a PhD student at the time, but a professor there now. And he was just so inspiring and really got a lot of us just to get so excited about growing food for people. So yeah, I've been farming for the last 10 years. A lot of it has been out in Squim for River Run Farm. And yeah, I just love growing vegetables for people and love using my body to, yeah, make food, and have now gotten really excited about, yeah, completing that life cycle and making seed.
So,
or growing seed, rather.
The usual cliche is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? We're going to make an analogy from that to which came first for the seed business. Where do you start? And do you start with a seed or a packet of seeds or a bunch of seeds? You start with plants? Do you do both? I guess I'm looking at what are the elements of having a seed company? Obviously, plants and seeds, but you know, the whole process of getting from one to the other, whichever direction you go.
Ideally, it starts with someone saying, these seeds are important to me, and I would like you to steward them for me. And this has happened a handful of times with Tinker, with the Svoboda pepper more recently, with Stephen J. Dean.
From Oats Planter Farm.
And also Tessa from Seed Dreams.
So there is an element of preserving species of plants, starting from seeds. That part of the reason you're having a seed company is to keep certain species of certain kinds of plants available.
We see ourselves as one of the pieces in this huge puzzle of agriculture. So, you know, obviously there are a lot of seed companies out there, big and small. We love the varieties that we work with, and we've developed relationships with them. And some of, you know, the Svoboda pepper, we don't have a relationship with yet. We haven't grown it yet, but we were really excited that Casey reached out to us and said, hey, my neighbor used to grow this pepper in Oregon. I would love to see it grown and offered to the community. Will you start growing it? And I can grow it this year also, and we can make sure that it stays alive and stays out there. I think that that's an important role for a small seed company, small regional seed company, to kind of build relationships with the people who have stewarded these plants for a long time and continue to steward them.
When I think of seed companies, I think of Johnny's and I think of Territorial, because when it's time for me to order seeds, typically I have a couple of catalogs and I look at the catalogs. I would imagine you folks don't intend to get to be a company on that scale.
I would be shocked and impressed if we did.
Some important advice, or I thought good advice that we got from Steve from Oats Planter was like, make sure you're pushing it. It's not pulling you. And so we're still in that phase of deciding how far we want to go and what we want to turn it into. But I don't see being Johnny's big personally.
Yeah, that'd be a little little too big for us, I think.
Here in Jefferson County, we have, I think, a tradition of small seed companies. And the first one that I'm aware of is Abundant Life. I don't believe Abundant Life is any longer in business, but Forrest Schomer, that was his passion, I'd say certainly 30, maybe 40 years ago. And there have been other companies since. How have they influenced, maybe even inspired you three?
As far as I know, Abundant Life, Organic Seed Alliance kind of grew out of Abundant Life. At some point, their warehouse, seed warehouse burned down. And the organization, I do not know the details here, but made a pivot from seed packet sales towards research and education. I don't know. We have relationships with Tinker, who also is heavily involved with Abundant Life. And I would think that some of the ethos of Abundant Life carried through to the Organic Seed Alliance, which Sam and I directly were learning from. But also, I don't know, it's just wonderful that there are these, you know, that Tessa and Steve paved the way for other small seed companies in the area.
And the Tinker, we keep hearing Tinker's name. She is Tinker Cavallaro. Many of us know her. She has been in these parts from probably the 1960s, involved with the food co-op, important at the food co-op for many, many years, and also in small-scale agriculture. And as we all know, quite a wonderful human being as well. Land is hard to come by for a place to live, for a place to farm, for a place to have a shop. Where are you folks actually having your farm or farms? I believe there's more than one. And how do you go about securing the land for growing your plants and your seeds?
Yeah, we have two locations where we're growing the bulk of our stuff, although we do have a bunch of different plants actually kind of just scattered around the community, mostly in our community garden or in our personal gardens. But yeah, we have one location down in just off of Center Valley Road at Mosaic Farm. We have about an acre there where we're growing a lot of our stuff. And then we also have an acre that we're leasing from River Run Farm out in Sequim. And both of those came from long relationships that we've built. I've been working for River Run for the last 8 years. I'm not currently working for them anymore, but I did invest a lot of time and energy into that relationship before we started leasing from them. And then Katie's had her garden at Mosaic Farm for
5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So you're scattered, which is kind of a nuisance, not all in one place, but that is one of the consequences of the supply of land issue or the lack of supply of land issue.
Yeah, but yeah, it feels like land access is such an important issue for us all to be thinking about right now.
I would love to see a farm incubator program start up in Jefferson or Clallam County.
Case.
And I've dreamed for a long time of the land at Nash's becoming an incubator farm.
I think I need to know more about what you're... I don't understand.
Oh, sure. A farm business incubator. I was part of one in Rhode Island, and there is a very functional one in Skagit Valley managed by Viva Farms. Basically, and the one that I was part of was managed by a land trust. It was state-owned land, and a land trust managed the land by renting it out to farmers. The predominant model that I see in Jefferson County is land that is privately owned and then rented out to small-scale farmers. There are a handful of properties that the land trust has managed to get into ownership by farms, which is amazing. But I do think that there is still a lack of secure land that is available to rent for people who want to steward that land, who don't necessarily have a lot of resources, who are not necessarily going to be owning that land eventually. And I could see that as a really great way to provide that sort of stepping stone for anyone who wants to be able to steward land.
And above and beyond land in itself, when you want to start a farm, there's a lot of overhead in terms of just infrastructure and tools and things like that. So a farm incubator would be a way for people to share those high cost items as they build their business.
You have a catalog online. I don't know that you have a physical catalog. You can tell me if you do. You shake your head, no.
No.
So in your online catalog, how many varieties at this moment in February of 2022, how many varieties do you have available for me to buy?
I think it's like 71 or 72.
Identify, I don't know, three or four of your real favorites, the ones that excite you the most or please you the most when you go out to your garden and see the plant producing seed and flower and fruit.
Yeah, we have this really awesome melon, which we grow out in Squim, and we've grown it for the last 2 years out of there. Katie has also grown it in Chimicum, but we have grown it outside with very little water and have gotten lots and lots of melons. It's kind of a fun story. Katie, when she lived in Rhode Island, got some seed for melons and then, you know, would eat a melon that was delicious and then save the seed from that and then would get seed from a different seed company and, you know, has brought all these melons and grown them together so that they've all crossed. And so, you know, there's a ton of genetic diversity in there. And then we have grown that out many years and keep selecting for the earliest melons
and the sweetest
melons. And now we have this melon that ripens kind of like late August, early September, which is, you know, in the realm of the time of the year that you would want to be eating a melon, which is great. The melons continue to ripen into mid-October, which sometimes you're kind of done eating melons at that time. But anyway, so it's this cool adaptions, this story of adaptation.
Well, I'm impressed because melons, I mean, as Joanne well knows, Katie may have some sense of this. I have grown a garden probably in my life for 50 years, and it never occurred to me that I would, in this climate, ever attempt to grow any kind of melon. And you're telling me that you have a variety that I could grow and would likely grow successfully at 500 feet elevation, 2.5 miles from Chimicum?
I've done it. I've grown them successfully for the last 5 years here, maybe six.
That is very convincing evidence and also really good news, actually. What else besides the melon, other varieties that are really dear to you?
The sweet corn.
Oh, the sweet corn. That's a fun one. And the squash. The sweet corn was the beginning of that was a variety trial at OSA a few years back, and Sunfield grew out the trial and allowed all of the different varieties to cross. They were all organic. Most of them were hybrid, and there was one open pollinated variety. The goal of the trial was to find a substitute for a really popular sweet corn variety whose name of that is gone for me right now. But it was about to become unavailable for organic sweet corn growers. I think they were going to, the seed company was planning on replacing it with a genetically modified version. So, the goal of the trial was to find organic sweet corn varieties that would work in this climate. Most of them were hybrid. One of them was open pollinated, and they were all allowed to cross pollinate with each other at Sunfield. And then Ezra over at Sunfield saved the seed from that corn, gave me some, and I grew it out for 2 years, allowing it to further cross. And then we grew it out this year for seed, for the seed company. And I've been really impressed by the quality of the corn. It's very sweet. It matures. It has matured reliably for us here. It's beautiful.
So Joanne supplied me a list, and I'm going to read from the list to move things along here. Broom corn, B-R-O-O-M corn. What in the world is that?
Well, broom corn, you might imagine you make brooms out of it. And we have a good friend, B, who is a local broom maker. And a few years ago, I heard her say that, you know, she doesn't know if she was going to be able to keep doing this craft because she's unable to get broom corn from the States. And they were, you know, she was having to buy it from, I think it was, I can't remember who it was through, but it was coming from Mexico. And there was really like questionable agricultural practices happening. And she was just like, didn't want to support people not getting paid well. And so she was trying to figure out how to grow broom corn up here. And she's got some seed from Johnny's. She worked with two farmers down in Southern Oregon and grew, I think, about a half acre of broom corn and then went down and harvested it all to make brooms. And I kind of got excited about that. And so the next year I was like, hey, can we have some of the seed for that? Could we plant some? And so we planted maybe a 100-foot row of the broom corn last year and got about 10 to 15 plants where the tassels were long enough, like the straw part of the broom was, or of the broom corn was long enough to actually make a broom out of. So we saved those ones. And then Katie also...
I ordered 7 different varieties from GRIN, which is the USDA National Seed Bank Seed Repository. And I was looking for varieties. You know, broom corn is not well adapted to our climate. And I'm not sure how many of the broom corn plants that we planted matured seed. So I was looking for other broom corn varieties that should have long tassels. There were a few pictures of the varieties on the GRIN website. They should have long tassels, and hopefully they're northern adapted. I tried to select ones that have the potential to be northern adapted.
Yeah, so now we have these, you know, the seed that we grew last year, the seed we've gotten from Bee, and then, you know, these 7 new varieties, and we're going to grow them all next year and do a variety trial and allow the ones that work to cross. And I don't know, just keep working on this variety so that hopefully Bee's able to grow broom corn up here.
Sounds like something that a person with a degree in biology just might do. There's a couple of problems I can imagine you might run into. One is I have to be careful in our garden sometimes that I don't inadvertently have some of my plants cross-pollinate with yours.
So oh, yeah.
It seemed like that is a concern elsewhere, probably in a larger area. How do you prevent that from happening?
In SQIM, there's a formal pinning process where everyone who grows seed gets together and says, I'm growing beets here. There's a map out on the table. And then somebody else says, okay, well, I'm going to grow chard here. Beets and chard will cross with each other. And then somebody else puts a pin down on the map and says, okay, well, I'm going to grow beets here. And it just, it goes around in a circle like that. And you go through all of the common crops, the oleraceae and the spinach. And we do not have a formal pinning process in Jefferson County. I think maybe because the seed growers here are either working on very different crops or are far enough away from each other that isolation isn't an issue. But we talk to our neighbor farmers and make sure that they know what's going on and offer them squash if they're planning on growing squash that's different than the variety that we're growing.
And Joanne has talked to me, so I need to be careful sometimes about whatever it was I don't remember. The other issue, and this is a really big one, is how do you know that your seeds are vital? So you want to put seeds into a packet, either a great big packet to sell to other seed companies or to a small packet to sell to the likes of me. How do you know that the seeds that you're selling actually will sprout?
We germ test them. We take the seeds, we put them in a damp cloth in a plastic bag, and then we wait for them to sprout. And then we count how many have sprouted, and from that we get a germ rate, germination rate.
And that's printed on the seed packet, I believe.
So it
you
is.
Know what to, and at what threshold do you need to achieve with your test in order to put those seeds into a packet?
It varies depending on the variety, and we refer to the Knott's handbook that has a list of the minimum thresholds for each type of plant.
And sometimes we take that into consideration when we're figuring out how much to put in a packet.
So once again, how do we find you? How do we, as people who want to plant your seeds in our gardens, how do we find you?
You can find us at the Port Townsend Co-op. You can find us at the Chimicum Corner Store. You can find us at Bay Hay and Feed on Bainbridge. You can find us at Secret Garden. You can find us on our website, saltwaterseeds.com. And if you want to meet us, come to the farmer's market for the beginning of the season.
Do you anticipate being on the, what's it called, the farm tour in the fall?
Oh, we probably should do that.
That's a great idea.
We really need to get our name out there, and we probably will take any kind of promotional opportunity that we're given.
So Joanne in an email wrote to me, quote, seeds are similar to music and stories. They shift based on who is playing, growing, or telling them. So I want you to explain that.
Yes. This is something that I've been turning around in my head just a little bit here and there. Seeds, every seed variety has a story, and every variety, every seed goes, you know, has history. They all have history and they all have stories. And the variety can shift slightly depending on who is growing it or where it's being grown, in a similar way to the way that, you know, stories get passed on generation to generation. And maybe the story changes slightly depending on who the teller is, and songs get passed down from musician to musician through time. And maybe the song changes slightly depending on who's playing it. And I think that it's important to remember where those stories came from, where the seeds came from, who the original stewards of them were, who the stewards have been throughout time, in a similar way to the way that we should be remembering who the original storytellers were of the stories that we continue to tell, and where the songs originated of the songs that we continue to sing, and who has continued to steward all of those songs and stories throughout time.
Katie, thank you for that. I appreciate the thought. At this point, I invite Joanne Pontrello, who's a fiddler and who does maintain certain fiddle tunes in our culture as well, to take us out with a fiddle tune. While she is doing that, I am going to say that you have been listening to the story of Saltwater Seeds, told by its founders and its owners, Sam Scheit, Katie Miller, and Joanne Pontrello. Thanks to the three of you for joining me on Attention, Please. You can hear this interview again today, Monday at 5, and on Saturday at noon. You can hear it also as a podcast, which you can access on the podcast link at the kptz.org homepage. Steve Evans is the host of next week's Attention, Please. As I speak these words to you, he has not told me whom his guests will be, nor his topic. Nevertheless, listen for sure. Thank you for listening, and I'm Phil Andrus.